This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it was an interesting week. Facebook is finally getting serious about privacy. The Apple iMessage is still having problems, especially when you try to get off of the iMessage ecosystem. And they arrested the people that were behind these computer takeovers. Mm-hmm. It was the Black Shades Cyber Gang. 90 arrests around the world. And they're just rolling out a new 911 feature. You can 911 a text message to 911. And it will go straight to the 911 call center.
The number two?
No. Just do 911. You just text it. I'll get into that later. Okay. Later in the show. That's something that new that's coming out. And then more revelations about what the NSA has been up to with the Cisco routers. Today we're going to feature the man who proposed the use of passwords on computers.
That's a neat idea.
The developer of passwords. The nemesis of all you folks that just can't remember that gazillion number of passwords. If we would have invented biometrics, we wouldn't have to do this.
Just put your thumb on it.
And of course, it was a huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Giant.
It kind of bounced. It was heavy.
I think I think somebody's putting a lead weight in the bottom of this bag.
I think Mr. Big Voice is sabotaging you.
I think somebody is because, you know, normally email doesn't weigh that much.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't weigh anything.
I know, but, you know, that's what it is. We got an email from Paula in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, my neighbor recommended that I change my wireless router to either channel 11 or channel 1 to improve the speed. She logged onto a router, which was at 192.168.1.1, and made the changes under wireless settings, basic security settings. Now, we're in range of at least four other routers, wireless routers, in my neighborhood. Actually, I live in a small kind of townhouse complex. In my estimation, our experience improved quite a bit when we moved our router channel from automatic to channel 11. Did this really improve things, or am I imagining it? Thanks, Paula in Bethesda. Well, Paula, you are correct. A change in channel may help. You see, the wireless standard 802.11 has the Wi-Fi standard. Has 11 frequency channels. You know where that number 802.11 came from?
No.
The IEEE group that formed 802, their first meeting was February 1980.
We talked about this.
We did. And so 802 stands for February 1980. And this was the 11th subcommittee. So the standards for Wi-Fi are 802.11. That's where that comes from. So they have 11 frequency channels, but if you look at the frequencies of each channel, they're very wide, and they actually, all the channels overlap. The only way to get non-overlapping channels is to go with channel 6, channel 1, or channel 11.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that your neighbors have frequently the routers just operate all at channel 6.
Okay.
So if you're all on the same channel and you're all sharing the same bandwidth, you're basically sharing the bandwidth with these other four people, and so you don't have maximum throughput. Typically, the other routers are not going to be on 1 or 11. So I just typically set mine to 11 because I'm figuring my neighbors aren't going to be smart enough to do that. They may be if they listen to Tech Talk.
Probably would be.
But you know, I'm not convinced they really do listen to Tech Talk. So I think that is not a bad idea. Now, I have to say that I have Fios. I'm not happy with my speed, even though I'm on channel 11. I don't think Fios is as fast as they advertise. I pay an extra $14 a month to get 75 megabits per second.
Before? Did you have Comcast before Fios?
No, I've had. No, I didn't have Comcast. I had the other cable that's in
was
Fairfax
County. Time Warner?
Yeah, and so it'll come to me because I blocked them totally out of my mind.
Now, were they faster than what you have on Fios?
No, Fios was faster when I went to it. But now Fios is gradually beginning slower and slower. So I signed up for this higher speed Fios and pay an extra $14 a month, and actually it's no faster. So I think I may have to call Fios. I'm not really that happy with it.
Is it slowing down because more people are on it in your neighborhood?
I think more people are on my fiber optic trunk line, and they're slowing things down. So I'm not actually happy with that. By the way, you can check your bandwidth. Go to broadbandreports.com, and there's a tool section. Go to speed test, and you can check your download and upload speed. So you can just know how bad it really is, just if you want to have any joy in the morning. But good job to move to channel 11 when you have so many other Wi-Fi routers in the neighborhood. We got an email from Len in Virginia. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've been getting certificate errors on all my devices, my PC, my iPhone, my iPad, when using Chrome, Firefox, and Safari browsers. On Safari, the message is cannot verify server identity. In Firefox, the message is this connection is untrusted. In Chrome, the message is this site's security is not trusted. These messages pop up on all the well-known sites. Now, I've gone in, I've made all kinds of adjustments to my wireless router, I changed my password, my security key, I disabled remote control. I actually reconfigured everything, and none of that seems to be working. By the way, I picked up your show first on WMAL, and I've been following you around all the different stations for a long time.
You can't say those call letters.
Oh, is that not allowed?
No, you're not allowed to say that.
Okay, I just picked you up.
On some other radio station.
On some other radio station.
On some off-brand radio station.
Yeah, okay. So, now, this problem, I don't believe, has anything to do with your router, Len. What happens is they're checking to see whether the security certificate is actually up to date, and they do a number of consistency checks. For instance, if the time and timestamp on the certificate don't agree with the time in your computer, like, for instance, if your computer has a time that's like 2 years old and this has a timestamp which is in the future, it's going to say bad certificate. So I tested that. I took my computer and I changed the date back to 2012, and I went to Google and I got a certificate error.
Huh.
So and then once I put in today's date, the certificate error went away. I really don't think that Google is going to have a bad certificate. What happens is these certificates have, you know, you get the certificates for a year or 2 years, and then they expire. You have to renew them. So there was one time a few years ago, my IT guy did not renew our Stratford email certificate. And so when I logged onto the Stratford email account, I got that error. I made one phone call. He updated the certificate, and bingo, we had it. Now, the reason that we have these certificates is those basically are the encryption key for secure socket layer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that your browser is checking for certificate accuracy is that sometimes your account is hijacked and you're not looking at the site that you think you're looking at, and the certificate doesn't match. And so it's a way to protect you from the so-called man-in-the-middle kind of attack. And you could disable the certificate check on the browser, but I wouldn't recommend it. I would go back and double check the dates. I don't know whether the date in your if there's a date in the router. I just don't believe the date in the router is going to have any impact. But I'd check the date in the router too. Check the date on all your devices and see whether that works. I went to Google. I went to all the sites. I just can't believe Google would let their certificates expire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only other thing is that maybe somebody's hijacked your browser and they're redirecting you to other sites. Occasionally, there are hijacking deals, and you think you're at Google, but you're really not. And you put in Google, and basically it goes in And when you put in google.com, it goes out to a domain name server and it sends back the IP address. But this malware, it intercepts the returning IP address, puts in its own IP address, and sends you off to some other malicious site. And so perhaps that's what's happening, and you're not really at Google. So without actually seeing your computer, I don't know exactly what it is. I'm just giving you some options that you may look at. But I would check the date first on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good email. And email us back to see how all that works out. We got an email from Jim in Bowie. I'm trying to get back my hacked email account. Actually, facemail account. I'm trying to get back my hacked facemail account. And you know, I'm not having much luck, but I'd like to set up another account while I'm trying to recover the old account. Is that going to create a problem? Love the show. Longtime listener, Jim in Bowie. Well, Jim, getting back your hacked facemail account is possible. I mean, they have automatic ways to get it back right away using trusted friends. But if that automatic recovery method doesn't work, you've got to go to the old tried and true manual method where you've got to talk to a person. They've got to go in and verify that you are who you are. And people have, if they're persistent enough, have been able to get back their Facebook accounts even after they disappear. If you set up a new Facebook account, do not use the same email address and the same username, because that's going to create confusion. You've got the same identifier on the new account as you had on the old account. So when they try to look up your account, I think they're going to look up your new account. And I think if you use the same identifying information, you're not going to be able to recover your old account. So set up a new account, but create a new Gmail account, or, you know, you can make new accounts so easily, and create a new username. And then you can use that to your heart's content, and it will have no impact on the old account. We got an email from Carl Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, I tried to download the latest installment of Tech Talk, of the Tech Talk radio show, and iTunes indicated there was an error in downloading the podcast. It had an unknown error, 302. I just thought I'd let you know. Thanks to you and Jim for a great show, and I never miss it. I love those David Byrd stop-bys. Carl Tyler, a longtime listener. Well, Carl, many others sent me an email about this problem, too. It turned out the person who maintains the Stratford website got the idea that they would just change the directory of all the audio files to kind of clean it up. Well, what happened was that broke all the links in the podcast, in the RSS XML file.
Oops. That person's not you, is it?
No.
Okay.
That person will remain unnamed. And so as soon as I got back these emails, I sent an email to the unnamed person, and within 10 minutes
it was fixed.
He put the directory structure back in place and everything was working, but I really do need emails from the listeners. That keeps me on top of all this stuff. And thank you for listening, Carl Tyler.
Yes.
We got an email from John in Fairfax. How does Google Print work? Can I use it with my old printer? That's, you know, old technology. Well,
this is a very good question.
Yeah, the Google Cloud Print, it's a new technology that Google has, and it connects your printers to the web. Using Google Cloud Print, you can make your home or work printers available to you or anyone you choose. So once they're on the web, you could print from your iPhone, your iPad. You could do it from anywhere in the world as well as in your house because you're going through the Google Cloud.
Holy cow, so you could be at work and print something on your home computer.
Or vice versa, yeah.
Neat.
And so it's actually a very nice application. And there are a number of applications that print directly to the Google Cloud. They're in this kind of a default setting, like all the Google Docs do.
Right.
If you use Google Docs, they'll print to the Google Cloud right away. Now, the Cloud Print will work on your phone, your tablet. You need a Chromebook on your PC and any device hooked to the web. Now, the classic printers have to connect to a laptop or PC because they don't have the Google Cloud Print software built in. So they got to hook to a PC, and then you're basically sharing it through that PC to the cloud if it's just an old-style printer. And so in order to share a printer to the Google Cloud, you need Google Chrome. and you just simply take Google Chrome. And a feature of Google Chrome is that in the upper right-hand corner, you've got these three lines, kind of a little square. Click on that, and they have something called Printer. And you simply can attach a printer, your local printer, to it. Now, you've got to log into Google Chrome with your Gmail account because you're using your Gmail account. That's how it knows which printer to send it to. So when you go to, say, another device, you have a Chrome browser. You log into that Chrome browser. And then when you go to the cloud, it only shows the printers that you've registered. And then you can print to that from anywhere.
So you can... Theoretically, I could register a printer at my office.
Yes.
Even though it's maybe behind a giant corporate firewall, I could do that?
Yeah, because the web access is going to go. If you go behind a firewall.
I've thrown him a curveball.
Yeah, I think you could, because it's connecting through port 80. It's basically internet access through port 80. I actually think you can do that because I hooked up my Google Cloud at home, and I printed from my iPhone, but then I was within the same Wi-Fi network. So I should have really, tried to print it through my outside of thing. But I think you can configure it.
I think this is homework.
That's going to be homework for the next show. Now, if you have an Android phone, you can print using the Google Cloud Print app. You just download the Google Cloud Print app. Now, as you would expect on Apple, they don't really have it. Apple doesn't like Google.
No.
So, but you can download a paid print program. It's about $4 or $5 for Print Central Pro, and that lets you print to the Google Cloud. Also, if you use Google Docs, you can print directly to the Google Cloud. Now, if you have a Google-enabled printer, it connects directly to the internet.
Uh-huh.
And then you don't even have to have the PC on, and you can print to that one directly.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm really thinking David Byrd would always want to be able to print to his Google Cloud printer.
So, but if you're on an Apple device and you've got you can put the Chrome browser on an Apple device, right?
I have that application that I'm using, Print Central Pro, that actually has a connection to the Google Cloud.
But I'm saying, but you can now get the Google browser.
Yeah,
on.
you could do the Google browser.
Would that bypass the whole thing?
That's right.
Okay.
I think you could.
Okay.
I haven't done that, though. So I'll do further
homework
on this.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Byrd.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ,
He's here. You may have heard him in the background.
Google Schmoogle.
Okay. Yes.
Google Schmoogle.
I knew you'd want to know about the Google Cloud, Dave, the Google Cloud printer, because, you know, aren't you into that?
Oh, Cloud Schmoogle. Call it anything you want. It's a different part of the phone line buried somewhere, okay? It's not a cloud. Come on, really not. Come on. It's all telephony. But this is not what I wanted to talk about real quickly, because I burst into your show for knowledge.
Well, it wasn't really hard this weekend because the door wasn't closed.
The door wasn't closed.
There was no bursting involved.
I thought that was an open invitation.
It was an oversight not to lock the studio door. Would you make note of that?
Another thing to rag on Mr. Big Voice.
That's
about.
Right.
Doc, for all your listeners who are listening, all three of them, because it's Memorial Day.
It is Memorial Day.
It may be fewer than that.
It may be fewer than that. I've made some rules for myself. If you get on Facebook, and I hate Facebook now, mm-hmm. I'm sorry I ever got on it. I really am.
Me too.
This is one of my rules. I'm looking at Facebook, which is rare, but if I see something at someone... See, this is what I didn't bargain for. When I first got on Facebook, I was very naive. I didn't know how it worked. Bum, bum, bum. So a friend of mine talked me in this like 3 years ago. Then I get all these requests from, hey, Jim Russ wants to be your friend.
And but I go, I really don't.
Wow, that's... Help me out here. I'm swimming upstream.
Okay,
so,
all right.
So I click, okay, that's nice, because I don't know how to befriend anyone. All these requests come in, and they want to be your friend. It sounds so neat. It sounds so wonderful. They want to be your buddy. And then the dark side of Facebook opens up, and you got to see every ridiculous picture, every post.
Every place they've eaten.
You get these people who take pictures of what they had for lunch, and they post it. And then what really irritates the the heck out of me is I look on my phone, you've got 5 notifications. And I go, what notifications? Oh, yeah, so-and-so's changed their profile picture. No, no, please stop.
Okay, first of all, Dave, I turned off notifications for Facebook on my phone.
Oh, I found out how to do that.
Yeah.
And I also found out, this is my rule now, if I read somebody's post that makes me want to make a snarky comment, okay?
Unfriended.
Unfriend them immediately. I, as soon as I found out how to unfriend, I have unfriended most of everybody on Facebook.
I don't blame you.
So there
I'm
was
sick of this.
It's annoying.
How do I get off of Facebook? How do I just pretend like it never happened and can I just leave? Can I do that?
You can do that. That's not
really. I'm serious. I hate Facebook because I think they sell your stuff. Then they're asking you questions like, oh, what's your status? Are you single now? What? So they can sell that to somebody?
That's right.
Too?
That's what they're doing.
I want off of this thing. And also that LinkedIn thing.
Yeah.
I got on LinkedIn. You know what LinkedIn's all about? It's 5,000 people without a job. And they want to link up with you. I got no time for losers. LinkedIn is L, but it's not
it
for
should
link.
Be linked
it's
out.
Losers. Losers all want to connect with you. Okay. Can you find me a job? Yeah, great. This is why I LinkedIn? Really? I want to get off all this stuff, Doc. I have the right to be unknown. Do you agree with me?
I absolutely agree
now,
with
you're,
you.
You're the CEO of the big...
Breaking news. You're with us on LinkedIn?
You are?
Yeah.
Really? You used to love... No, but do you
love
like LinkedIn?
That.
I thought you liked LinkedIn.
LinkedIn is good because we're hiring.
You see that it's a different situation.
Okay, we use.
We're not, you and I are.
It turns out that LinkedIn.
We're boat rowers. Okay,
exactly.
He owns
we
the
make
boat.
The burgers.
Yeah, we make the burgers. He owns the restaurant. Okay, that's the way.
So
it goes.
So it turns out LinkedIn is like a recruiter tool nirvana.
Really?
And so for recruiters love it.
They do.
They recruiters love it.
Well, no recruiters ever want to link up with me. It's always some loser that doesn't have a job.
But see, what?
Hey, can you give me somebody's phone number?
So here's, I can get exactly.
Here's the thing: is what recruiters do. There's a certain job type that they're looking for, so they search for people that are employed in that particular job, and they use it for stealing people. It's a form of high tech way of poaching.
Right.
And so recruiters love LinkedIn for that. Now there was one guy on Facebook that had an interesting technique. You know, every day you log on, it tells you whose birthdays they are.
Yes.
And so he gets a list of birthdays. God. What he does, he asks himself the question, do I want to send this guy a birthday or not? And if he says no. He just unfriends them.
That's a great idea. How much do I care about this person?
Because he gets because it's not a big project. It's like 6 or 7 a day. You just do I even want to tell that guy happy birthday?
No.
Boom, unfriend him. So every day you just pare down your list.
Oh, well, I'm down to like 5 already.
I know people who have gotten onto Facebook just to get to the magic 5,000 number. They don't care who these people are.
I'm not your friend. I'm a trophy.
It's
okay?
stupid.
I'm sick of this stuff.
I'm not 12 anymore.
You know, I there's people that I used to like until I befriended them on Facebook. I said, yeah, you can be my friend. And I look at the stuff they post and I said, I don't like these people.
You know what? This saved you time in real life, though, because you didn't have to meet them in person and realize you didn't like them.
Exactly.
Look at how much time it saved.
But there's no way they can find out that you unfriended them.
No, it's anonymous.
It's all anonymous. Okay.
They'll be able to tell that your feeds aren't coming through to them. But on the other hand, I never post.
Then
they're not going to know. They're not going to notice anything. I don't post anything to Facebook. I don't like Facebook.
I tell my nieces.
I said, would you stop the stupid posting you're doing? Because people read that and employers searching for Facebook posts.
We use Facebook a lot during the recruitment process.
Excuse me, Peggy, I've noticed on your Facebook page that you've posted many times that you're frustrated. Does that mean that you're unstable? That's the stuff they're thinking about.
Hey, David, would you repeat after me? Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. We're not going there. So can you get off Facebook by just not ever using it or getting on it?
You can actually delete your account.
How do you do that?
It's a multi-step process, but you can actually delete your account.
Oh, please, I want to so badly.
They don't make it easy, but it is possible to go through and delete your account. And really? And so well maybe I should just cover that
because I think you
please because you have two people in this room who want to do
hey,
this.
Hey, the romance is over with yeah. Facebook. I'm not 12 and I don't need that many friends.
So actually,
I'm sick of these people. You know, you get these Facebook with, hey, have you ever thought about being friends? Hey, if I want to be friends with this guy, I'll do that. I don't need you to tell me about it.
Look, I had four Grand Slam breakfasts this morning. Who cares?
So Facebook's figured out though that people want privacy because they're moving to things like WhatsApp, which it's more private. That's why Facebook bought WhatsApp for $19 billion.
Thank you. We're going to get you sooner or later.
And mm-hmm. No, but so Zuckerberg says, you know, I think we're going to lose our all of our users unless we provide more privacy. So this week, they came out with a privacy audit, and they'll actually let you see who can see all your stuff, and they help you adjust it.
I went into my profile and deleted everything. I deleted all the pictures. I deleted everything.
I don't want anyone to see any of my stuff.
I don't want any of that stuff. I'm not posting any pictures because it stays there forever.
I'm with you, man. I want out. We're going to buy a bus ticket out of Facebook.
I want out of this. It was a stupid thing to do to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. It's trophy. It's bounty hunter trophy people.
I've got 75,000 friends. Isn't that great? No, it's not because you don't really have 75,000 friends.
Back to LinkedIn. Do you get, since you and I are in the same industry, sorry to hijack the show,
guys. Sorry. Okay. To talk about the space.
Do you get the do you get the notifications? These people want to hire somebody like you and all the broadcasting industry.
Oh, yeah.
It's no place that we'd ever want to work.
I don't want to work there. Yeah.
No, Savage Maryland is looking for you. They need somebody in the mall to make perfume.
Somebody to watch the transmitter overnight.
Get out of here. No, but are we the only ones complaining about Facebook? Like, let us go?
No, a lot of people are
complaining.
Please
let me go.
Facebook.
Forget you know me.
The bloom is off the flower with Facebook.
Well, yeah, and I got a friend of mine who was, I've been inviting this person to my house forever, okay? And then I see this Facebook posting. Hey, I'm up the street having dinner, and I call her. Hey, excuse me.
So, but I will tell you where Facebook has the people that are happiest with Facebook are the people who only have their family on it,
yeah.
And they use it as a way to share photos.
Share photos.
Yeah, but you're sharing that with everybody though.
No,
do that, right?
No, it's only their family.
Oh, that's right. Because if you go private, however that is, nobody can see your stuff.
And you can make it so it doesn't go to friends of friends.
Yeah, you can do that.
You can restrict it, and so there are people because we got a lot of folks at Stratford. They've got family all over the world in Asia,
right.
And the U.S.
Okay, well, that
and so
like
they
that.
Use it for that, but they don't invite as a friend anybody unless they're part of the family. And so it's like a family photo album, and that's what it's used for. People love it for that.
Well, I can see that, but you know, I've got people in the newsroom. Hey, you haven't responded to my friend request. I said I'm never going to.
You know how else you can share photos with people? Email them to them.
Hello. There we go. That's
and that way, only the people you want to have see them?
No, I'm just fed up with Facebook. But it just hit me a couple of weeks ago. I said, man, this is just crazy. I don't want to deal with these people.
Speaking of, another one that drives me nuts, I see all the time, Foursquare. What is the point? Because all you do is post where you are. What is the point of that?
I don't want you to know where I'm at. I don't know
I don't know the point. I don't get Foursquare.
Yeah.
I'm not really.
You got Instagram, and you got all this other stuff.
Yeah.
What's Kim Kardashian going to do if they take down Instagram?
Oh, you know, there was somebody that I knew who was on Facebook, and they used it to share all their family pictures.
Yeah.
And every time they would take a picture with their iPhone, they would upload it to Facebook and then delete it from their iPhone.
Really?
And then their Facebook account was hijacked, and they lost all their pictures.
Oh, great.
And then last week.
So you can't really use Facebook as a photo repository.
No.
You really want to keep it separately.
Well, here's a question. We were talking about the cloud just a few minutes ago. You could save all of your stuff on the cloud and give other people that you want access to that, right? That's another way to share photos if you want to.
You can.
May I quote the Rolling Stones? Hey, you give up my cloud.
Hey.
I'm the cloud.
No, you get off my
me.
Cloud.
For instance, I share my drone pictures with my Dropbox account.
Can I just bring this back around
to something I love?
There you go. Hey, you heard about dronies? That's the new thing. You've heard of the selfies, right? With the cell phones. Now it's dronies.
Oh,
dronies.
My God.
Yeah, I'm going to post my pictures of me in the Himalayas with me. You know, now if Kim Kardashian finds out there's dronies, we're going to have to watch videos of her in bizarre.
I know.
You know what? I got yesterday from somebody, and you're going to love this because you can turn the whole dog thing you've got.
Right.
Drones walking dogs.
Oh my!
You
God.
Won't have to worry.
What
just
a thought.
Turn the drones loose. at the ranch, and they'll take care of the dogs.
Can drones pick up dog poop? That's what I want to know.
I'll bet they could.
I don't know.
If they can deliver packages.
We're losing
they
the can dog. Move
packages. I'm thinking that could be a project for Google Labs. Why don't you talk to Sergey Brin, see if you can deliver a page.
It's been fun. Thank you for letting me bust in here.
Okay.
It's wonderful. But you need to do a tutorial on how to get off of Facebook.
Yeah. All right,
for real,
that.
not pretend you feel good because you think you're up, but they're really still there.
What we need to do is...
actually a program that will unsubscribe you from all social networks automatically.
That's what I want.
But I'll feature... You just give it all
LinkedIn,
your username, and it just
Facebook.
Goes around, and it deletes your existence on the internet.
And what we'll have to do is have David in that day, and he will be our lab rat.
Okay,
we'll just get him off of all
we'll
this stuff.
You just do it in real time. It'll do everything for you.
I love that. Okay.
Great.
I'll do some research on that app.
I'm taking the space elevator.
Okay, yeah. Take
Happy
the space elevator.
Day,
that's right.
You too, buddy.
All right, Doc, I'm making an executive decision here. Okay. Why don't we take a break?
Okay, that sounds very good.
And we'll be back in just a minute with Profiles in IT. This is Tech Talk Radio. Don't break the door on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Fernando Jose Corbato. You familiar with him?
No, but I will be in about 5 minutes.
Fernando Jose Corbato, that's what his mother called him. His friends called him Corby. Corby Corbato was a pioneer in the development of time-sharing operating systems and the man who first used a password.
How do you decide that that's what you want to get involved in?
I don't know.
Awfully specific.
It is. Well, he's got an interesting story. Fernando Jose Corbato was born in Oakland, California, July 1st, 1926. He graduated early from high school so he could enlist in the Navy at age 17, and he became an electronics technician after World War II. He entered Caltech and received a Bachelor of Science in Physics in 1950. Corby then went to the MIT Graduate School, where he started working on a PhD in... physics.
There we go. There's
the link here.
The link out.
Yeah. While a graduate assistant at MIT, he was encouraged by Professor Philip Morse to use
never mind.
The Whirlwind Computer. Now, listen.
Oh, Professor Morse. I thought he said Morris.
No, Morse.
I wasn't reading with you.
Listen, Morse, when I was there's a two-volume textbook, the Foundations of Theoretical Physics. It was written by Morse and Fleshbach. And that was my Bible.
You're kidding. How about that?
That was my Bible when I was working on physics back in the day,
mm-hmm.
both for my bachelor's as well as for my PhD. Morse Fleshbach was like the go-to book for all the mathematical tricks in physics. And there he was working with one of the guys. After he received his Ph.D. in physics in 1956, Corby joined Professor Morris's research staff at the MIT Computation Center, and at that time they had an IBM 704 computer. He served as deputy director of the Computation Center from 1958 to 1965. Now, he proposed a project on the IBM 709, which was a later model, and he thought he could demonstrate interactive computing. You see, up to that time, people do batch processing. You take a big stack of cards, and there would be this professional computer operator back there in a white jacket. You'd give him your stack of cards, and then he'd put them in the card reader. They'd read the cards, and then they would run your program.
Is that what it sounded like?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's when I was working on my PhD dissertation, my stack of cards was one box. It was about 2 feet. It was about a 2 foot thick stack of cards. they'd read those and because I was like a poor graduate student, I had to get whatever time was left over. So I would go to the computer. This has really nothing to do with Corby.
That's okay. Whatever.
Sorry, Corby.
It's a holiday weekend.
Sorry,
do what you want.
Sorry, Corby. I'll get back to you in a minute. So I'd go to the computer center at midnight, and there weren't many people there. And I could turn into my stack of cards, and he'd put it right on the card reader and run it right away. So I would work there from midnight till 6 a.m. there and get all my work done. Because in the day, it would just sit there in the queue. They might not run it for 8 hours.
Now, these cards were like all hole punched, right? Is that how this worked?
Yeah, these were Hollerith cards. They had holes in them, and they were about this.
Hold it up to the mic.
Yeah, about this size. Can you see that? Look, I'll hold it up to the mic. Can you see that? Where's the webcam on this mic, Jim? What kind of technology?
We used to have this technology in here, and now,
that's
whatever.
Right. So let's get back to Corby. So he said, listen, wouldn't it be nice if people could sit at a terminal and they could submit their jobs? It could be a timeshare deal where people, a lot of people could share the computer resources instead of having to turn in these cards and have this batch processing. So he thought, okay, why don't we do it where instead of it just running one job all at once, it would run one job for a while, then it would run another job, and then another job. And then four jobs could be running all at the same time, because maybe one of the jobs could take 8 hours to finish. The other three jobs might only take 5 minutes to finish. Okay. Wouldn't it be nice if those 3 5-minute jobs could just be interspersed? They'd get done right away.
Sure.
And then they would just sort of share time with the 8-hour job.
And so the 8-hour job would only take 8 hours and 45 minutes then, or something
like
that.
Yeah, and these other guys would get out their 5-minute job in just maybe 10 minutes. And mm-hmm. so this seemed like a good idea. So he proposed this. So this was like a revolutionary idea. So he and Bob Daly and Marjorie Derwin Daggett, they worked together, and they built the initial version of the compatible time-sharing system, CTSS. That was the abbreviation. And they demonstrated it in November of 1961. And it provided what appeared to be simultaneous access for four users who use terminals. Now, in order for this time-sharing to work, the computer would have to be able to interrupt the job it was running, save the memory state of that job, then pull up another job and run it. And then when they would come back to this first job, they would have to restore the state that it was left in and run it some more. So they'd have to store the intermediate state. Now, what they did then, they had four magnetic tape drives, and they would store the state of the computer program on, each one would have a tape drive. It'd save it on that tape drive, and would come back to process the job. It would load everything in from the tape drive and start processing again. This is like a poor man's way of having virtual memory that we now have. But this was like how they could do it. It's like proof of concept.
It's just like putting a license plate on that job. So you could identify it, right?
Yeah, and so they could actually time share using this method to store the state of each program wherever it was when it was interrupted. So the CTSS evolved rapidly because it was so useful, and I mean everybody could then use the machine. Like some low-level guy like me would not have to come in at midnight to get my job to run. I could just submit it like at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it might come back in an hour.
Like going to Kinko's and say, I'll be back in a couple hours to pick up the stock.
Yeah,
job.
So, mm-hmm. You know, if I'd had that down when I was working on my PhD dissertation, I'd probably had a much happier life.
And
at
a
the
lot
time.
More sleep.
And a lot more sleep. So this was very popular there at MIT, and the most. So then they decided. In 1962, they started this Project Mac, and it was an ARPA-funded project, which was designed to really explore, you know, the full capacity of a timeshare machine. And they started work, and they appointed, in 1962, Corby to be the project manager for the second-generation system. They called it Multics. Multics, that stands for Multiplexed Information and Computing Services. Mm-hmm. In other words, they wanted to take this idea of time sharing with four people and turn it into a service. Because he was really multiplexing between four jobs, but they wanted to broaden it and make it more standardized. Now, the most important feature of Multics was the integration of memory segmentation and paging into a virtual memory system. Now we just live with that because, you know, if you stop working on a job, you throw it into virtual memory. And then when you need it, you pull it back, and you don't need to have a tape drive. So they were pioneering the concept of virtual memory. They were also pioneering the ideas of protected memory so that if one of the programs goes totally berserk, it's not going to screw up what's stored in memory for another program.
Okay.
They're actually reserved, and so that it's sort of memory security ring. So they were developing a lot of core concepts that became integral to all the time-shared operating systems. This is why Corby is so important, in addition to the password deal. Now, Corby was appointed assistant professor of electrical engineering at MIT in 1962, and he got professor in 1965. And that's when he was chosen to lead Project Max Computer Systems Research Group. Now, while he was working on this timeshare deal, Corbato is credited with the first use of passwords to secure access to files. You see, before, when you just had a single user, you didn't need a password. You're the only guy on the machine. But all of a sudden, you've got all these other users there. You don't want that guy down the hall to see your files.
That was the question I was formulating in my head here. Was this originally intended as a security thing so people didn't see other people's work?
Yes.
Okay, so it was security-driven.
Because once they had this full-blown, you know, multi-user system, you had to protect your files because you didn't want that guy down the hall.
It wasn't merely just identifying job A from job B.
No, this password was specifically used to secure access to files. So he's credited with coming up with the idea of using it for file security. But, I mean, the idea of passwords has been around for a long time because,
sure.
You know, you'd have like the secret word to get into your club meeting when you were little. That was like a password. Yeah. Okay, the secret word. Lions are green, and then they know that you're a member of the special treehouse club, and they'll let you in.
So I know you spent your childhood.
That's right. And so so he was just applying that password technique to computers, and so he actually was interviewed about it, and he said, I think I opened up Pandora's box with passwords because now I got to remember passwords, and he says it's not really that secure. And he says, actually, he was in the interview. He says, I don't even follow the rules. I got a little crib sheet that I keep in the desk with all my passwords. So he says, that's probably a big security violation. So he's even thinking biometrics would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
He served as MIT Director of Information Services and the MIT Network Czar in the mid-70s. He retired in 1996. MIT was in the middle of all of this internet development, and so, all this networking and multi-user systems just sort of bled into the whole internet. Corbato received the Turing Award, which is the top level, highest level award in computer science, in 1990, for his pioneering work in organizing concepts and leading the development of general purpose, large scale, time sharing, resource sharing computers. In 2012, he was made a fellow of the Computer History Museum for his pioneering work in time-sharing in the Multics operating system. By the way, when they stopped working on Multics, I forgot to bring that up. When they stopped working on Multics because they it was never really a commercial success. They had asked a General Electric to sort of put together the hardware for Multics, and they got Bell Labs guys to work on the software for Multics. But when they canceled the Multics project, two of the guys at Bell Labs that had worked on it, Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie, they said, you know, these ideas of Multics are so good, we're going to apply these to a new operating system. And they created Linux out of that.
Wow.
Or Unix. So Unix was actually, Unix came out of the ashes of Multics. So all these ideas of memory management, memory paging, you know, secure virtual memory, all of that from Multics was then put into Unix, and all of that then ultimately went into Linux. And this formed the basis of many, many operating systems. So he is actually a core pioneer in this stuff and had very significant contributions to computer science, in addition to creating the first password for file security.
See, now if you listen to us on Saturday mornings, this is not an hour wasted. You learn things.
That's
and
right.
I hope you're paying attention, because you have your chance in just a moment to get rewarded for your knowledge by playing the pop quiz here on Federal News Radio on Tech Talk. We're heard every Saturday on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, online at federalnewsradio.com and techtalkonline.com. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yeah, you thought this was a radio show.
No,
but, you know, it but
isn't.
That's if you're a first-time listener. But those of you that have listened for a while know that this is really classroom of the airways. And so, of course, you have to have a pop quiz to assess what you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, and if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get an A for the day. Plus, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karem Dining Room.
The A for the day really doesn't get you much of anything.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But
the tickets for food are pretty good.
But the A for today, you can brag to your kids about that.
Okay.
Okay, earlier in the show, we talked about Fernando Jose Corbato, otherwise known as Corby. He, of course, was a pioneer in time-sharing operating systems and the man who first used passwords to protect file security and file access. Where did Corbato work while he worked on these multi-user operating systems? If you get the right answer to that, you'll get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. You just have to communicate that answer
exactly.
to us.
Exactly. And that's why I'm here to tell you that if you're going from west of Oakland, California, it's 877-936-9333. From east of Cambridge, Massachusetts, because that's, of course, where MIT is, 877-936-9333. Everybody else, anywhere else, It's 877-936-933 on the wildcard line. Or I'm sure you have other ideas.
Yes, if you're calling in from Crimea, you might want to use Skype. And you can simply reach us on our through Skype by connecting to Tech Talk Radio 1. And that will be forwarded to the studio free of charge. And that will be a fully encrypted phone call.
Indeed.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about NASA celebrating Earth Day.
Okay.
They made a giant global selfie. Now, what they did last month, NASA asked people to submit selfies of themselves using the hashtag global selfie, which answered the question, where are you on Earth right now?
And you know what? My Twitter lit up with all kinds of annoying junk.
That's right. More than 36,000 people from more than 100 countries responded, and the result is beautiful. It's a 3.2 gigapixel image that uses selfies as individual pixels. And they actually made a whole map of the world. They got two sides of it, so you see one side of the world, the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But each pixel is actually a selfie that you can zoom in on. Now, according to NASA, the mosaic is based on the views of each hemisphere that were captured on April 27th through a visible infrared radiometer suite that's on the Suomi National Polar Orbiting Partnership satellite. The global selfie took weeks to complete. NASA had to go through more than 500,000 submissions from Twitter, from Instagram, from Flickr, from Facebook, and from Google+. Here's a link to the global selfie, and you can simply, you can actually just Google global selfie and get it. And you'll have, I'll give you this kind of a complicated link. I'll actually give it to you at the show outline. But it is a lot of fun. You see this thing and you click on it anywhere in the world and you'll see a selfie from that part of the world. It's a fun place to go to.
Believe it or not, we've got somebody here on the line. Let us go to the front of the class. Richard from Silver Spring, please step front and center. Dr. Schertz, please ask the question.
Yes. Earlier today, I was talking about Corby Corbato, the developer of time-sharing operating systems and the developer of the password. Where did he work while he was doing all that work on time-sharing systems?
Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
That is correct. You win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
Richard, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for calling, and stand by just a second. Kevin will be right with you on the phone to take your information. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We'll be right back after this for more of Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. This text 911 is a nice idea.
Yeah, really.
Instead of calling 911, you can just send a text message to 911, and that would be forwarded to the emergency center in certain areas. And I'll tell you where those areas are.
Okay.
This isn't useful for deaf people who really can't talk on the phone. Or there are certain cases of violence in the home where you're hiding under the bed and you can't really talk. So being able to text it would be helpful. The big news is that the four major wireless phone companies are now providing text to 911 service to local governments. This is actually a big deal. It's currently being used in 16 states, sporadically, not all the counties in the state. And they would allow people to send text messages to report emergencies. Now, the four providers that are offering this service to the localities are Sprint, Verizon, Wireless, T-Mobile, and AT&T. Those are the four big ones.
Mm-hmm.
So this service is going to be provided by May 15th. I mean, it's already started. So the FCC is going to require all providers to offer it by the end of the year. So now we're seeing the local governments begin to roll out these programs. So it's currently only in 16 states. So Maryland is one of them, but only in Frederick County. Only one county in Maryland has it, Frederick County. Virginia has it, one of the 16 states, but only in four counties: Henry County, James City County, Southampton County, and York County. Not in Fairfax County.
Right.
D.C. does not offer the service at all.
You got to think that this is going to come to just about everybody at some point, right?
Yeah, the next step's going to be for widespread adoption, because this is a great, great, great idea. I really like it. So I thought I'd talk about it, since this was a breakthrough that the carriers all agreed to do it, finally.
Yeah.
Facebook offers privacy checks.
Oh, boy.
On May 22nd, Facebook announced it would give privacy check up to each one of its 1.28 billion users worldwide. And it's conducted by a cartoon dinosaur. It's very important. Now, don't laugh about Facebook. It's a cartoon dinosaur because I have to get the attention of the Facebookies.
Good grief.
Now, So what it does, Facebook will also change how it treats new users by initially setting their posts to be seen only by friends. Previously, the default setting was so they could see seen by anybody. You had to go back and do it. That's what was so bad. Now, the change in default setting and a person-by-person review is a sharp reversal for Facebook, whose privacy settings were very complicated in the past. But Zuckerberg's watched the rapid growth of privacy-friendly services like WhatsApp and Snapchat and the anonymous sharing apps like Secret and Whisper, which compete for many of the Facebook users. And he's finally figured out, hey, we better do something. So now what Facebook does, when you're signed into Facebook and you want to post something on your network site, you'll see this little blue cart dinosaur will pop up with the message, we want to make sure that you know who you're sharing, that you're sharing this with the right people. And then it walks you through all the privacy settings so that you can adjust it. So they're making it front and center and much easier. And they've been testing portions of this privacy check for months, and they haven't decided how extensive it will be. But finally, Facebook is getting serious about privacy. Now, eBay users are still at risk after the cyber attack, even if they change their password. Uh-huh. Remember, eBay admitted on Wednesday that it had been the victim of a cyber attack, and it asked all 145 million active users to change their passwords. But here's the problem. The intruders had access to a lot of data, not just the password. They had the customer name, they had the encrypted password, the email address, the physical address, the phone number, and the date of birth. Now, many of these password questions are the same ones that are used involved in, like, resetting your password or setting up a new password. And so it would make it easy for criminals to try to bypass security settings. It's also likely that these email addresses will receive more kind of spam. And you're probably going to be subject to some of telephone artists calling up. And since they've got all this information about you, they're going to sound really legitimate.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to pry out additional information from you. So be very careful. And now people are questioning whether eBay was using proper methods. All of those things should have been encrypted, not just the passwords.
Right.
I'd also recommend I have LifeLock, which it's an identity theft thing, which I think is pretty good. Listen, the show's over. We love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Also go to the Stratford University website, stratford.edu. Check out the programs and say you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Tuned in later. Want to hear the show again? This replays tomorrow night, 8 p.m. here on Federal News Radio. See you next week.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We've got baseball coming up on the radio here today. The Nats taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Pregame starts at 6:30 here on Federal News Radio, so stay tuned for that. Again, our replay is going to be tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock of Tech Talk. It's going to be mostly sunny, 76 today. Right now outside our studios in Northwest D.C., 61 degrees. It is 10 a.m. This paper.